welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, today's show begins with a special birthday wish, not completely related to the program, but ties into another show I do, but also just a general cultural note. Today in 1938, Action Comics was #1 was published, introducing Superman. So a happy birthday to Superman and that character who's continue to endure since the Golden Age. I do want to encourage you, if you like, you can enjoy my old-time Radio Superman podcast over at laserandsword.com. Now, before we get into today's episode of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, I do want to encourage you, as you make your travel plans, remember to go to johnnydollarair.com. It's really a simple way to support the program. When you travel, just search johnnydollarair.com first. If you get either one of their published specials or one of their name-your-own-price deals on an airline ticket, a hotel, vacation package, part of your purchase price goes to support the show. So when you're planning your travel, remember johnnydollarair.com. Now, let's get into today's episode. It's time for The Cronin Matter, Part 5, and coming up later, a new Carter Brown story.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Dr. Bigby here.
Dr. Bigby, I'm asking you for the second time now to come out to the Cronin place.
I told you last night, Mr. Dollar.
The circumstances are different now, a lot different. We don't need a doctor. We need a coroner.
A coroner? Where are you calling from? The operator told me the phone out there was out of order.
It is. I'm at a forestry station a mile down the road. Jason Prell cut the wires last night before he was killed.
Jason killed?
Shot to death during the storm.
So that's how he ended up. It took a long time, but everything finally comes home.
Yes, Mrs. Cronin said the same thing an hour or so before she died.
Dolly, too. Her heart, Mr. Dollar?
In a way, maybe.
The dancing darling. Finally at rest. She... What do you mean, in a way?
Dr. Bigby, Mrs. Cronin was murdered.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. From Special Investigator Johnny Dollar at the Cronin Estate, Wells Falls, New York, to the Home Office Surety Mutual and Trust Company, Hartford, Connecticut. Assignment, the Cronin Matter. Expense account, final page. Item 13, 10 cents. A half pack of cigarettes I left with a farmer who gave me a lift back from the forestry station. The price of my own feelings at the moment would have been lower. About 8 cents lower, in fact. I brewed another pot of coffee and sat down to wait for Bigby. But this time I laced the coffee with brandy. The sun was up by then, clear of the horizon, bringing a bright new morning and a brand new day. The storm was long over. The world sparkled and danced. But too much of the night was still with me, and the past still too much alive. And yet, maybe Dolly Cronin was better off. She was a part of that past now, where friends were always true, and every minute of life was even more wonderful than the last one. And where she was still, and forever, the dancing darling.
Good morning, Johnny.
Oh, hi, Sylvia. I'm in the coffee business this morning. How about it?
Please. Having yours with cream, I see.
Yeah, bad night. Shall I make yours the same way?
Right. I had a bad night, too. Thanks. You look real beat, Johnny.
Couldn't be any beater.
Something pretty terrible happened last night, didn't it?
Yes. Jason Prell is dead.
Oh.
And Dolly Cronin is dead.
Oh, no. I loved her, Johnny. I didn't mean what I said last night about life always having been too easy for her, and you were right. was just being frustrated, tied in knots and covering up. I loved her. She was sweet.
Yeah, she was quite a girl. She had something, I don't know.
She had love. She loved people, and they loved her in return.
Maybe so. Anyway, I guess this belongs to you now.
The necklace? The circle of fire? What do you mean it belongs to me?
She made a will last night. I witnessed it. She left the necklace to you.
I just can't believe it. Johnny, can I put it on?
Why not? It's yours. She wanted you to have it. You look good in it.
I just can't believe it, Johnny.
Well, before you get carried away too far, maybe you'd better brace yourself.
Oh, it's not mine after all.
Oh, it's yours, all right. But it's not real.
What?
It's a good copy, worth maybe $400 or $500, but that's all.
Well, I don't understand. It's so well known, the Circle of Fire. It's been written up over and over.
Yeah, from old records. But nobody's really examined it for years, since before Barnaby Cronin died. It's been locked up in a bank vault until I took it out.
Was there ever a real one?
Yes, originally. But it was broken up and disposed of years ago. Jason Prell knew it, was in on the substitution, I suppose. That's why he was so desperate to steal it from me and get rid of it before I found out it was a copy. He knew that if that deal came to light, it would call attention to some of his other activities, worse ones.
What do you mean?
Prell had complete charge of Mrs. Cronin's estate. He told me it was worth practically nothing. But according to records I saw in New York, it amounted to over $1 million in the beginning.
He was stealing her blind all these years.
Oh, it was easy. She was alone in the world, knew nothing about business. She trusted him, thought he was her friend.
She trusted everybody, much too much.
Well, she sure trusted the wrong ones, including her husband.
Barnaby?
Sure. Who do you think disposed of the necklace and slipped her a copy after making such a big deal out of his fabulous wedding gift?
A phony. And she worshipped him. The king. In her book, the man who could do no wrong.
Well, in the business book, he didn't do much else but wrong. According to the records, most of his deals were pretty shady. Especially after he and Prell teamed up. Yes, Miss Atherton?
Dr. Bigby is here to see you.
All right, show him in.
Mr. Dollar, I wouldn't believe too much of what he says. He's a chronic drunk.
Yes, I remember you telling me. Show him in.
Yes, sir.
Well,
I was just thinking, Johnny. Mrs. Cronin didn't know any of this, I assume.
No, she was safe in her dream world.
And she thought she was giving me the real necklace.
That's right.
It's crazy. And kind of wonderful, isn't it? Just like that, she gave me something she thought was worth $500,000. Just because I was nice to her and liked her. You know something, Johnny?
What?
I'm just as glad it is a copy. It's beautiful, and I love wearing it. I'd have been scared of the real one. And I'll always remember that, like that dream world of hers, she thought it was real.
One more question left, but a big one. The question of murder. And I already had the answer. I was sure of it. And I knew there was nothing I could do about it. Dr. Bigby was a man under 60, but he looked years older, a harried man, tired and worn. He sat down for a moment and we talked. And I began to realize that here was another man who'd been under Dolly Cronin's spell and who was shocked and hurt by her dying.
It was a remarkable thing and a difficult one to explain, Mr. Dollar. Like many another, I suppose, I often wondered why I felt the way I did about her. It was a sort of magic she had.
Yeah, I know.
Even as a girl here in the village, she had that same power and had it without knowing it. Everybody loved her.
No, not quite everybody. At least one person didn't.
Yes, you mentioned on the phone the word murder.
That's right, Dr. Bigby.
Who killed her?
A man we can't touch because he's already dead. Jason Prell.
Well, he's done about everything else, I guess. I wouldn't put it past him. What do you base it on, Mr. Dollar?
A bottle of pills. Prell supposedly went to Tupper's Lake last night and got a prescription filled for Mrs. Cronin. She took some of it this morning, an hour and a half before she died. There it is. I'd seen the bottle on the train coming up with a few tablets left on the same prescription. And these are different.
Well, you're right on one count, Mr. Dollar. Those aren't what the prescription calls for.
What do you mean, one count?
I talked to the druggist at Tupper's Lake on the phone last night. He told me about Jason being in.
All right, it still stands. He had the prescription filled and then changed the tablets, substituted these.
It's possible.
Would you happen to know what they are without having them analyzed?
I've got a pretty good idea, but I'll wait until I've examined her before I'll say positively. Mr. Dollar, I'd like to explain why I wouldn't come out when you called me last night.
Yeah, I wish you would.
I'd been drinking.
So I gathered.
I'd been drinking that other time, too, and I'd made a mistake. I didn't want to make another one.
Just what do you mean?
When Barnaby Cronin died here, I signed the death certificate.
Yes, I know.
I hadn't treated him. He was dead when I came out. I called it a heart attack. I was drunk. And I was wrong. Barnaby was poisoned.
Go on.
I didn't suspect it until later. And then I was afraid to do anything about it. I'd signed that certificate, and I knew it would break me. So I kept still. And I consoled myself with drink. And finally, it broke me. So the same end result was achieved.
Look, Dr. Bigby, if Barnaby Cronin was here alone, then how was he poisoned?
Alone? He wasn't alone when he died. She was here with him.
Mrs. Cronin?
Of course not. Why do you think he was always making trips up here, always by himself?
I didn't know he was.
For years, every week or two, the whole village knew about it. She was here with him that night. She's the one who called me, asked me to protect her good name. She's the one who poisoned him. And now she's had another try with the same poison.
But why?
Ask her why. Ring for her and ask her.
That won't be necessary.
Well, I'll go on up and make my examination.
Well, Miss Atherton, I'm asking, why?
He was planning to break off our relation. He told me that night. She'd finally won. That silly little fool had finally won. But I didn't let her win. I killed him.
You're confessing the murder, you know.
It doesn't matter now. I've accomplished everything I meant to accomplish.
So it was you who changed the tablets in her prescription bottle and substituted the poison?
Of course. It was so easy. For once in my life, things were just as easy for me as they'd always been for her. Will you have the sheriff come out, Mr. Dollar? I'd like to make my confession.
It's odd how things work out sometimes, Mr. Dollar.
Yeah. Mrs. Cronin said something like that last night.
I was pretty certain when you showed me the tablets, but I wanted to make my examination first.
What do you mean?
After Barnaby died and I started to suspect Miss Atherton, I managed to steal the poison from her in order to analyze it. I substituted harmless tablets of the same general appearance.
And those are what she's kept all these years? What she gave to Mrs. Cronin?
That's right. They were perfectly harmless.
In that case...
Dolly Cronin died from a heart condition. The tablets had nothing to do with it. In a sense, Dolly died the same way she lived. From natural causes.
Expense account item 14, $83.90. Incidentals and transportation from Wells Falls back to Hartford. Expense account total, $263.30. End of account, end of report. Remarks... The insurance angle here seems a little muddy. Premiums were paid for years on an item that didn't exist. And yet, no claim was filed, and none will be. So, well, I leave it to your legal eagles. Me, I'm beat and tired and maybe a little sad. I've come out of this with a kind of nostalgia. And for a time and place I never even knew. And I'm halfway in love with a girl back in that time and place. A girl I've never seen. Oh, sure, I know. It's a dream world and a dream girl, and none of it exists. But it's too bad. I wish it did. Because she must have been a honey. A real sweetheart. A dancing darling. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, please, there'll be a new exciting story on Johnny Dollar beginning next Monday.
Next week, the story of a man worth $50,000 who didn't have a cent to his name. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by Les Crutchfield, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Virginia Gregg, Shirley Mitchell, Vivi Janis, Barbara Fuller, Benny Rubin, John Daner, and Parley Bear. Musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Welcome back. Well, tremendous. Tremendous overall. I've said a lot about Bailey's performance in this one. I will say just the way it ended was very poignant. In some ways, it's something that we can relate to as fans of older radio programs. It's not so much the mysteries. I don't know if I'd want to end up more than once in Sam Spade's office or something like that. Has kind of a high mortality rate. But certainly there are some performances and places and people. You think of places like River's End from Dr. Christian or Pine Ridge from Lum and Abner. And the amazing talent of so many of these people and their personas. Gracie Allen, Bob Hope, Gordon McRae, so many. And you can really relate in some ways to the closing monologue. Just really nicely done as a dramatic story. I will say, Johnny, after last week, Johnny is definitely getting into the habit of barking up the wrong tree. So better watch that. On Facebook, Stephanie Rom says, "Love that Johnny Dollar." Indeed we do, and it'll be Saturday and Sunday, and then we'll get another new adventure on Monday, so be sure and be listening. All right, well now it's time for today's Carter Brown mystery, and we start off with the 29th episode of Carter Brown, so this is their 8th overall story, The Widow is Willing.
Carter Brown Mysteries. Adventures in excitement and suspense based on the best-selling novels by the slick storytelling sensation, Carter Brown.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Carter Brown with another of my stories for you, a venture which I call The Widow is Willing. It's the account of an insurance investigator named Mark Hunt, who finds himself marooned on a lonely island in the company of an assortment of characters, male and female, one of whom could be a murderer. For my money, I prefer being locked in a lonely room with a typewriter, but there's no accounting for tastes. Well, here's Mark Hunt and his story.
When you get to the edge of the world, there's a river. And in the middle of the river is an island. That's where the Goldbrights live. It was a raw night, which made you think of vampires and things that go eek in the night. There was a moon with low clouds scudding across it. I'd given the old character who owned a boat $5 to row me across. He pulled at the oars, and I watched the solitary light on the island getting gradually larger. Nearly there.
Yeah.
Galbraith's been living on that island long.
He and his father before him and his father before that.
Yeah, what did his father before that do? To get banished, I mean.
It's some sort of Yankee joke?
Sort of. How did they get to the mainland?
They got it launched. You should have let them know you were coming and they descended.
Not for me, they wouldn't.
They ain't expecting you, huh?
That's right. Too bad about Henry Galbraith dying like that.
Uh-huh.
Stepped over the balcony outside his bedroom and ended up on the stone jetty, 50 feet below, they say.
Uh-huh.
The Galbraiths get on all right? Together, I mean.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, talkative, aren't you?
We're here. Yeah. You go up them steps and then on up to the house.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot. If I want to get back to the mainland again in maybe an hour's time, will you be around?
Around world's end at night? You must be crazy, mister.
Why?
You stay here long enough, you find out. Not a place to be by yourself, not at night. Get your bag. Goodbye.
The old guy pulled away and was lost in the night. I picked up my case and started up the steps which led to the path which led to the house. A gaunt, gray building. World's End. I thought the name was appropriate. As I pulled the bell rope, I wondered what Mrs. Galbraith would be like. Fragile, white-haired, with a quavering voice? Or more probably tough and hard and thin-lipped?
Yes?
This, I presume, was Mrs. Galbraith. She wore 15 dernier nylons, black. She wore a form-fitting dress, black. And since she was a blonde, the black did things for her. And for me. She may have been a widow, but she was also a wow.
Yes, what do you want?
Mrs. Galbraith?
Yes, I'm Mrs. Galbraith.
My name is Hunt, Mark Hunt, from Excelsior Insurance Incorporated.
Yes?
I'm sorry to worry you at a time like this, but your husband had a policy with us for $50,000.
You're very prompt in paying your policies.
It's not quite like that, Mrs. Galbraith. I'm an insurance investigator. When a big claim like this comes along, the company naturally investigates it before they pay.
Perhaps you'd better come inside, Mr. Hunt. It's not very comfortable here on the doorstep. I don't quite understand the need for any investigation, Mr. Hunt.
Mrs. Galbraith, your husband died 2 days ago. He was insured for a large sum of money. Therefore, the company has to be sure there's been no foul play.
You mean they want to be sure my husband died of natural causes and wasn't murdered?
You could put it that way, I suppose.
The police are satisfied he died of natural causes?
That's half the battle.
The other half being to convince you, I suppose.
Well?
I think the best thing you can do is stay here, Mr. Hunt, at World's End, until you've completed your investigation.
That's very kind of you.
Not at all. It would be impossible for you to work from the mainland, and the sooner it's finished, the happier both of us will be.
Of course.
You better come and meet the others. Then we'll have dinner. This way, Mr. Hunt. They're all in the living room.
She led the way down the cold, stone-paved hallway into a large room with polished wood floors, which contained 5 people. 4 men and a woman.
Just a moment, everybody. I want you to meet Mark Hunt. He's an insurance investigator. This is my brother-in-law, Clem Galbraith.
Hello.
Clem was about 30 or so, dark, slim, dissipated, crooked grin and a sneer in the eyes.
This is John Cross, an old friend.
Hi there.
Cross was rugged, looked the good-natured college athlete type.
Roger and Mavis Beavis.
How do you do?
Hello.
Beavis was fat and 40, rimless glasses, a successful businessman. Mavis was a redhead with a ravishing figure. Every time my husband looked at her, he got a stupid look on his face. I didn't blame him.
And this is Michael Degrescu.
Delighted, Mr. Hunt.
Degrescu had a foreign accent. The name was Romanian. He looked smooth and suave and probably shrewd.
Well, now that you've all met, I'll do something about drinks.
An insurance investigator, eh, Hunt? Checking on my brother's death?
It's just routine, Mr. Galbraith, with any large claim.
In other words, it's a case of did he fall or was he pushed?
Graham, that's no way to talk in front of Lila.
Why not? She probably gave 3 cheers when she found him on the jetty. We all know their marriage was a mistake. She made the mistake. She married him because she thought he'd spend all his money on her, and he didn't.
Clem always puts things so beautifully. Here's your drink, Mr. Hunt.
One of these days you'll get a crack on that jaw for talking like that.
Such a rugged character, Mr. Cross. The guy who never got past college, physically or mentally.
Please, that's enough. Mr. Hunt will think we're a bunch of lunatics.
It must be an interesting career, Mr. Hunt, being an insurance investigator.
It's just a job, Mrs. Beavis. Pretty ordinary most times.
Sounds rather sordid to me.
At least it's a job, Clem. Something you wouldn't know anything about.
We each take life as we find it, Mavis. Me with my brains, you with your looks.
Now look here, Clem.
Mavis married you for your dough, Roger boy. And we all know why you married Mavis.
Oh, that's the gong for dinner. Let's move to the dining room, shall we?
We got through the soup, the meat, the apple pie and cream without any more of the Bob comments. Then we adjourned back to the living room for coffee. While Mavis put on some records and the others organized a game of bridge, I found myself left with the Romanian, Michael DeGrescu.
Are you interested in art, Mr. Hunt?
One specific kind, sure.
What kind is that?
Leg art.
Ah, you mean the cheesecake?
Mm-hmm.
I was referring to something else. Myself, I'm a collector of everything and anything that is beautiful, from women to paintings. The paintings in this room, for example, very fine. I offered Henry $100,000 for them. He refused. I'm hoping Lila will feel differently.
Well, good luck.
I think I will have it. It was a sin that a woman like Lila should have been tied to Henry. I hope to add her, too, to my collection of beautiful things.
I got the impression that John Cross was in the running there.
Puh, Cross. A moron with muscles. She will have more sense than that.
What the... Mavis, please.
Sorry, I didn't mean to put that on. I didn't know it was with the rest of the records.
That was stupid.
A bad faux pas. That was Henry's favorite music. Beethoven, the Coriolanus Overture. I don't like it myself. It was playing the other night when it happened.
Oh.
I think poor Lila associates it with Henry's death. Mm. That was careless of Mavis. Careless.
Or deliberate. Everyone went to bed around 11. The room I'd been given was upstairs, overlooking the water. A sheer drop of 50 feet. It had started to rain, lashing against the window as though it was trying to break in. I was sitting, having a last cigarette, when there was a soft tap on the door. I opened it. Mrs. Goldbright stood there. I couldn't help thinking that Goldbright was a good description of her hair.
Could I talk to you for a moment, Mr. Hunt?
Sure, come in. Ah, cigarette.
Thank you. Thank you. Must have been quite an experience for you, meeting our little group this evening.
That's an understatement. There's certainly a bunch of characters.
Clem was quite right, you know. The burning question is, did he fall or was he pushed? I'd like to know the answer to that myself.
Where were you when it happened?
In my room. Henry and I had separate rooms. The first thing I heard was his shriek as he fell.
You think someone could have pushed him?
They all had good reason to. So did I, if it comes to that. Henry was a good deal older than I am. He wasn't exactly a nice person. I'll be frank, I married him for exactly the reasons Clem stated. Clem himself has only a yearly allowance, but part of the estate reverts to him on Henry's death, so he had good reason to kill him. John Cross imagines he's in love with me. I've never encouraged his feelings, but he could have thought that with Henry out of the way, I might feel differently. Michael DeGrescu...
explained himself to me tonight. What about the Beavis couple, Roger and Mavis?
Roger's making a fortune, marketing gadgets. He's the driving force, but Henry put up the money. Recently, Henry took a dislike to him because he married Mavis. I think Henry decided to withdraw his capital. Roger has staked everything he has on a new project. I know that at this juncture, the withdrawal of Henry's capital would ruin him.
So everyone had a good reason for wanting to see Henry die.
Yes, including me. I had no love for Henry. And with his death, I'll presumably inherit his money. I'll know tomorrow. The lawyer's coming to read the will.
Why tell me all this, Mrs. Goldbright?
I don't know. It just seems to help, having someone like you in the house, Mark. May I call you Mark?
Surely, Mrs. Goldbright.
Please call me Lila. And if you don't mind... I'll talk to you again. Might help me to keep sane.
Anytime, Lila.
Thanks, Mark. I think I'm going to like you. A lot.
She left and I turned in. To the accompaniment of the wind and the rain beating against the house, I fell asleep. Suddenly, I was awake. Something coming from below, faintly from downstairs, had aroused me. The Beethoven music. It sounded eerie and terrifying in the night.
I speak from eternity.
There was something else, a voice, a whisper, weird and toneless in the room.
You are the one who can help. Eternity is forever. Yet, eternity can avenged.
With a supreme effort, I stretched out my arm for the bedside lamp and switched it on. But there was no one there. The room was empty.
Welcome back. Well, these are some cooperative suspects. He just shows up and they lay all their motives out. At least I think we've seen most of them. Seriously, a good job at kind of an establishing shot of the case and what everybody's into, and then ending with the spooky ghosts. What exactly is going on here? Well, that's anybody's guess unless you've listened to the whole series. Join us next Friday for another episode in this serial. And coming up tomorrow, we have The Lineup. In the meanwhile, send your comments to Box 13 at GreatDetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter, Radio Detectives. And become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.